Kevin, are those Angelo's sticks?
We are talking about what it means to live by the power of God as opposed to our own devices. And we have been talking about how shame is what keeps us from living by the power of God. It keeps us from being in total dependence on Him, and in fact, it keeps us from faith. What? You're doing it again already. We just started.
Well, you open the door. Shame, what do you want? Oh, yeah. Thinking how powerful that is.
Very powerful.
What if there were no shame?
Crippling.
There was no shame before the fall. The fruit of the fall is shame. They were afraid, and they were, but again, they were afraid that someone would find them out. And so, remember, we've talked a thousand times about how the fruit of the Spirit is to live without self-consciousness, to lose the capacity to think that the minute you're in or the moment that you're in should be any different than it is. But shame is what keeps us from doing that, because we are constantly trying to justify whatever it is that we do.
Would shame be the element that throws you into time?
Well, the fall is what threw us into time, and shame is a fruit of the fall. They were naked, but not ashamed. Now, after the fall, they hid themselves. And that's all we've done from the time of our first moment of self-awareness, is hide ourselves. And that cycle has to be broken. And it's broken by the power of God. The evidence that it's broken is that we no longer justify ourselves. We no longer make offerings. And I want to, hopefully this morning, we want to see how Christ totally destroyed by His offering the power of shame. Now, in a sophisticated society, you never admit that you're ashamed. But the reasons are, the excuses for, or the things that you put that you're ashamed of are legion. But there's usually some kind of a big deal. And so because of that, we can't have vulnerability. We always have to be calculating and seeing what He really meant by that. Can you understand what I'm saying? All right. Now, what they did is they covered themselves. Well, let's go back there, Genesis 3. And verse 6. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together, and made for themselves aprons. Now, apron didn't mean like the little apron you use when you wash dishes. It's they made for themselves coverings. And the coverings that we made are and make are beyond, we can't count them. There are so many. That's why any reference back to self becomes fruitless. And so, Ronnie and I were talking over the weekend about you can't go in and out of this position. The whole mystery of discipleship is to deny yourself, to not give any importance to self. And if you remember, it says that the spirit is lusting against the flesh, and the spirit and the flesh is lusting against the spirit. So you can't do what the things that you want to do, and that battlefield is never ending. It goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And if you happen to be good at that, then you can have the appearance of success and that the feeling of not wanting to be exposed becomes ambition. That's what we call it, drives you. You know, and Gary is a perfect example of it. And may I talk about Gary for a minute?
Go ahead.
Gary, when he was very young, was very small and very skinny. And he felt tremendous shame about it. And so he worked and worked and worked and worked, and nothing could stop that work. And he made himself into an athlete that was almost made the Olympics in 1964. But the driving force of that, and he's talked about it openly before, was the shame of his appearance. And that's why he constantly thought he needed a coach. And if he could only find the right coach, then he would be okay. And that's why he thought of me in those early years as a coach, which is just goofy. And each one of us has the same kind of experience. There's something, some image, some body part, some activity, something about us that we are ashamed of. And so that becomes or maybe it's even intelligence. Maybe we get bad grades. Maybe we were told we were stupid. Whatever it is, it becomes this driving force. Now, And the fruit of shame then is the preoccupation with self. And woe unto anyone who gets in that way. You only want to be around people who help you hide the shame, to help you build better aprons. Is everybody a little bit understanding? And this isn't only a few people. This is universal. Every one of us does it and did it, hopefully. But hopefully now we can come out of it.
Yeah, I was thinking last night, I talked about the life is in the blood and it's forbidden to eat blood. But I can see from what you just said, I was eating the blood of athleticism or something like that. And God can't intervene. I mean, it just... getting your life from another source, and it's pushing you along, so you think it's life.
Yeah, and it has nothing, it has absolutely nothing to do with the mystery of God, but you will put the name of God on it. And what has to happen in this fail-safe system of God's, the more you hide the shame, the more it increases the power. And so no matter what you do, you can never get beyond it. And so therefore, because it is the power that's causing you to hide, there can never be a place where you can't get out of it. So you can't live by faith, because faith by definition is abandonment of self. And shame causes total preoccupation with self, and you think you get rid of it for a minute, and then something happens, and pretty soon you're totally preoccupied with self. But the reason it happens, and I wish Harry were here, but the reason it happens is because you may abandon yourself for a while, but then what happens is you have something that you think is a good idea, a sweet thought, and you can't take just a little bit of it. That's what a lesson of Agag. You remember, God told him to destroy everything, and they just kept the good parts. If you don't, you can read that in Samuel 15. But anyway, the higher the stack of lies, the more likely it is to topple, and the games grow so complex And it's like playing three-dimensional chess. We can't make it work. And that's just, you can make it work if you have no, if you have anonymity. You can have the appearance of it working. You know, that's why, again, people want to go to the church where they are anonymous. They don't like vulnerability. And the more you have to hide, the less you like vulnerability. But what happens is God puts you in circumstances where you are forced into vulnerability. All right? Well, I want to go down here to what happens with the cross. Go to Mark 15. The cross was a vulgar word in ancient societies. The formula for sentencing someone to the cross was executioners, bind his hands, veil his head, and hang him on the tree of shame. As we've talked about so often, that many times they would kill the person, the person that was condemned to crucifixion first, and then hang him on the cross to shame him and to shame his family, so that it truly was the cross of shame. Now, in Christ's case, it was far more so, because he was stripped naked, and he's hanging naked on this cross alive. That was a worse penalty than killing them and then hanging him on the cross. What was that? There was one famous thing where something like 60,000 people were, or 6,000 or something, some huge number of people were put on the crosses up and down the Appian Way. I don't know, what was that for, you remember?
That was from Spartacus.
Yeah, I did it when Spartacus.
Was it Spartacus?
I think they did a big deal like that.
The purpose of us was to shame them, shame their families, shame whatever it was that they were involved in. So the idea of hanging a cross about your neck without understanding it is goofy. It's the cross of shame. Now why is shame so intimately involved here? Let's see if we can understand it. It says he endured the cross by despising or disregarding the shame. But shame literally bound him up. And that's what shame does to us. It makes us feel bound. Right? So let's, in Mark 15, verse 1. And straight away in the morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him to Pilate. So shame literally bound him. Now let's go to, and then in verse, the continue. And Pilate asked him, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" And he answering said, "Thou sayest it." And the chief priest accused him of many things, but he answered them nothing. Now, and the Pilate asked him again, saying, "Answerest thou nothing? Behold how many things they witnessed against thee." But Jesus yet answered nothing, so that Pilate marveled. Now, what shame does to us, and if any of you have experienced that moment of shame, you can't speak. You want to hide in a hole. You know, you are guilty of something, but you're ashamed of yourself. And it does. Now, without some kind of shame, without a little bit of shame, we couldn't have a society. And so, but we're talking about the shame that you know what I'm talking about, but that totally bind you so that you're silent. And shame silenced him. Now, shame makes us fear we will be rejected. Let's go down to verse 13. And they cried out again, "Crucify him." And Pilate said unto him, Why? What evil hath he done? And they cried out more exceedingly, "Crucify him." And so Pilate, willing to content the people, released Barabbas, and then they delivered Jesus, and he scourged him to be crucified. Oh, wait a minute. Where am I? Shame makes us fear we'll be rejected. And he was rejected. We are fearful of being mocked when we are in shame. And let's go to verse 16. The soldiers led him away and called into the hall called Praetorium, and they called together the whole band, and they clothed him with purple and plaited a crown of thorns and put about his head, and they began to salute him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they smote him on the head with a reed and did spit upon him, bowing their knees and worshipped him. And then down to, well, there's another place, but anyway, obviously, Jesus was mocked. And we are afraid of being mocked, so he is mocked. We are afraid of being exposed, and in verse 24, "And when they had crucified him, they parted his garments, casting lots upon them that every man should take." So he was exposed, he was naked. And then in verse 31, "Likewise also the chief priests, mocking, said among themselves with the scribes, 'He saved others, he cannot save himself.'" And shame makes us feel powerless, and he was powerless. Okay. Can you understand that each element of the act of shame that we are afraid of, he covered in his sacrifice?
He covered by his silence, not justifying himself.
He covered by everything we've just said, by being bound up, by being rejected, by being mocked. Shame is fear of abandonment. And so in verse 20, 34, I guess, yeah, or verse something, where am I? 34. "And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, 'Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani,' which is being interpreted, 'My God, why hast thou forsaken me?'" Shame makes us fear of being abandoned and forsaken. He was abandoned and forsaken. So when the scriptures talk about by one offering you have been perfected forever, it means far more than we can. You never have to concern yourself with the power of shame. Now shame can only be dealt with when it's exposed. And it's exposed and it's dealt with by mocking it, by laughing at it. Now that's not pleasant. We don't want to be mocked. But as long as that troubles you, then you're still hiding. And I hope I'm making this clear. We must be in this place where we can joyfully abandon ourselves to only His, to only the faith of God, so that there is no more concern with self. There's no more trying to fix self or do anything to not reveal, to not expose. But it's got to happen. That, to me, this is why we do what we do. Because you can go and quote unquote be ministered to and learn all about God and raise your hands in praise and speak in tongues and whatever else. But in the innermost parts of your being, where you're still bound and making more and more aprons to cover the shame, and there's no life. Now, to me it was huge when I saw that Jesus had gone through all of this about shame. And when I found out that the formula was bind him hand and foot and hang him on the tree of shame. Now he could have with a flick of his finger destroyed everything or made everybody change their mind. Made everybody make him king. He could have done anything he wanted to. But he took on himself not just your sin, but your shame. So that you can be a partaker of the heavenly calling. Now until this is manifested and lived, then you're still bound by the same thing that you've been bound with your whole life. And so the power of God is fine for a while until something comes up that reminds you of this thing you're ashamed of. Is this communicating to anybody? His enemies use shame in an attempt to destroy him. They succeeded. He was profoundly discredited. His mission was shown to the flesh to be a sham. His followers scattered. He was a total failure. Shame had the last word and defined him. He and his words are scorned and cursed until the resurrection. So that's only the resurrection by which we can live. And it has to be his resurrection in us. Not what we know about the resurrection. And again, because of his humility, he will always take the lowest seat. If there's something that you're exerting yourself in, then he takes the lowest seat. We would like him not to do that. We would like him, if we are troubled with something, we want to be quote-unquote delivered. As long as we want it to change. That's why it was such a profound experience. It's beyond words. When I had to ask God for forgiveness for wanting to be delivered from pain. Now, that I can't even begin to tell you how deep that affected me. Because who could ever have conceived that? But again, when you get to this level of in people's lives, it's dangerous. You've got to feel safe. Because you're afraid somebody will use something against you.
I was thinking about the fact that you block these things. It's like, it doesn't make any sense unless you already know and are able to convey to people that they're already covered. And the reason it's so funny is because you're sitting there making aprons to cover yourself when you're already covered. And so it's like, that's funny. If that wasn't true, then it would be a whole different kind of thing that would be going on. But the fact is, you are covered, and that's, because of what you just described. You took it.
Remember, we're either covered in his righteousness or we're covered in shame.
It makes me think of who told you were naked. If you're listening to that
No.
Poser.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the world and Satan and everything, everybody else tries to get to the cross without, while still hiding the shame. So the fruit of it is, and we spend our life still making aprons to cover different things. And you're a different person depending on which group you're with.
Which apron you
pull out? Yeah, you know, you're a different person with your family, and then a different person at your church, and a different person at your job, and a different person with, you know, and it just goes on and on. But to be naked and unashamed, to be the same in wherever you are, because otherwise, according to the scriptures, we're being a respecter of persons, because I can't tell my family that. Well, they probably already know it, but anyway. And so this is what causes all these truces and different. Thing. I mean, it's just endless. I don't know the way to cause us to be transparent, where we can have the transparency. But somehow I know that it's involved in vulnerability to one another, and that we confess our fault one to another that we might be healed. That's the fault there covers a whole lot of things. And it's not healed according to... The word for healing doesn't just mean fixing a little boo-boo. It means seeing and being made, that knowing it's that you're perfect. Though our outer man perish, the inner man is renewed day by day. But he's only renewed in our emptiness. Once we are pushing ourselves forward or getting what we want, that's why the whole of discipleship is about the denial of self. You can't continue to do all these things it's not. There's no easy way. But I know that it must start with vulnerability. Otherwise, it's just, and you're deep in that forest of your mind, and every green tree, you're still sewing aprons of the leaves of the trees to cover yourself. That's the real purpose of marriage, is that kind of vulnerability. It's a real purpose of the body, that there would be both. We're not defined by these things that used to trouble us anymore. Now we are defined by the resurrection, and that only. And you can't have the resurrection without the cross. Anybody else? We desire to our detriment to hear that the resurrection obliterates the shame of the cross. It doesn't. Our central self-deception is that successful people are autonomous and don't need others. Therefore, shame must be renounced or denounced and hidden.
Two different successes. You can seek your own personal success, where you achieve all your dreams, objectives, goals, or you can pray for God's success. Which is so opposite.
The Gospels see Jesus' shame and weakness as the preeminent revelation of God's power. But we want to see Jesus' strength and dignity. So we make Jesus into a golden calf that doesn't touch us at the innermost being. We make him a liturgy or an instrument to get what we want or to fix us. Look at it. Look at life from eternity standpoint. And see, the mystery of God is revealed only in this idea of his shame and his weakness, not his power and strength. And all righty. Anybody else? Kevin?
Talk about vulnerability. It brings to mind where Paul said something about restore him to the faith, like if somebody's off. I don't know why, but that just implies that the normal operation of the body is faith, and if somebody's off, restore him.
Do you understand that the Apostle John sees this shame and weakness as the glory of God? That's what the 12th chapter of John is all about. Paul said his strength is revealed in my weakness, in my proffered weakness. Otherwise, we're just running around acting. We're just, all the world's a stage, and we're just little actors in it. All right, we'll probably spend one more day on the shame, and then we'll get back to Romans. But this is, you can't know the power of God unless you address this. Amen? All right, you take a big guy.